The GA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
Well, when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so I opened up.
We're only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken.
All right, you're welcome along to the GAA Hour. This is the Hurling Show, sponsored by Paddy Power. We've Cheddar in here as usual and Damien on the line. Lads, I want to start off with Derek McGrath, and he's so honest. Like, he's almost honest to a fault. And sometimes I think he's maybe trying to protect his players here too much, because he's taken the blame now for these injuries that Waterford have. We know that they're being crippled with injuries. And he said, we tried to simulate as much as possible championship type intensity. This is in training. And he says, maybe in doing that, we went a step too far. So, like, I mean, geez, it's a big thing for him to take on his own back here, Cheddar, because every county tries to recreate championship intensity. Is that not the, like, we remember back years ago reading about the great Clare team in 95 and it absolutely be taking the heads off each other in training under Gerard Lachnan. Like, this has been going on a long time and injuries happen.
I actually read that article, Willie, and I didn't really take that out of it, to be honest with you. I think if you look at all of Derek's media articles, he talks, I suppose, you know, in a wider sense about a lot of things. And yes, he is a very, very honest manager and has been like that. You know, he hasn't changed his behaviours here one bit. But I don't think he really said that. I think he was averring to that, you know, maybe we did, maybe we didn't. But in terms of the right thing to do, look, you simply have to train with intensity. You cannot train with low intensity, let's put it that way. Of course, within reason, you cannot train with, you know, you can't have an A versus B team, you know, taking lumps out of one another. And, you know, I'd say that has happened at different times as well. But there has to be a degree of intensity to what you're doing. And you know, what you see in the training field is generally what you're going to see on the field the following Sunday. And you have to set that standard in training. And you can never let that, actually, it's the one thing I probably pay most attention to in the training program for the year at every session. Now, there will be some times when you will say, look, I'm not going to say this, but I'm happy enough that the session, you know, wasn't full on, that it was relaxed maybe tonight. You will never say that, of course, but at critical times you will always pay attention to the intensity that's going on in the session from every single player. And when you walk away after the session, you will critique every player. Did this person give everything? And if he didn't, I'd probably have to ask him, you know, I just noticed tonight that, you know, you weren't really going full on. Was there a reason for that? And if there was, fine. So I think I didn't read that into what Derek said. I think he was talking in the round about a lot of things here. And I think maybe the best performance for the longest period of any team has been the Kilkenny team of 20 years. And look, if you were at any of those sessions, or even if you go on hearsay, some of those were fairly tough sessions. So if it worked for Kilkenny in the one, you know, so many All-Irelands and so many matches, and all the science says, and particularly all the psychological people would say that, you know, you've got to set certain standards to intensity and you've got to keep those high, well then I think it's the right thing to do. Unfortunately, you know, hurling is a physical game. You will get breaks and all of that in it. And I think Derek has been very, very unlucky with the hand he's been dealt with here in terms of what has happened to his players.
Yeah, no, he definitely has. There's no doubt. And a lot of them, like rolling ankles and broken fingers, might not necessarily... That's bad luck. It's not necessarily the intensity in training. What about you, Damien? How difficult is it to recreate match situations in training?
Colin, the way I used to train when I was particularly when I used to always go down training with the club in the county, you have to train the way you want to play, and it's as simple as that. You can't train one way and then expect to play another way, and that has always been my philosophy. So when you're down training, you train 100 miles an hour and you go out and you play 100 miles an hour, and they often say the training should be harder than the day of the match, so that's the way you've got to prepare. But just on Derek McGrath, all you can do is feel sorry for him, and I really, really mean that. You know, like the last day against Clare, like they had so many injuries. Like we spoke about going into the match, you know, with Austin Gleeson and Mahoney injured, and then all the lads getting injured. during the game with back injuries, collarbones, broken hands. The whole, it was just, it's just incredible. Like, and you could feel nothing but feel sorry for Jarrick McGrath and the whole Waterford Hurling team and the whole Waterford Hurling County. But I'd have a little bit of a soft spot, so I would, for Waterford Hurling, and always have, because I've always said when I was growing up, I was watching this wonderful Waterford team of the Dan Shanahan's and the Kim McGraths and the Milans and Tony Browns and all these guys. And you get a grow and a love for Waterford Hurling, but you can do nothing but feel sorry for Jarrick McGrath and his setup. And what can they do? Like, they're going playing Tipperary now the weekend, and like, they're going to get beaten. It's as simple as that. And like, it's no reflection on Jarrick McGrath and the Waterford. There's just an incredible amount of injuries. And that, I suppose, the new hurling system and format doesn't help them either. Where if this was the old system, they would have lost their first game and they mightn't play another game for 3, 4, 5 weeks because they have to go back into the qualifiers, which would let them reassess things and maybe tidy up a couple of injuries. But the new system doesn't allow that. But you just feel sorry for Waterford and Jarrick McGrath in particular, and even for him, just to say that, you know what you were saying there about maybe they recreated too much of championship base of training, maybe it's his fault. Like, that you're 100% right. He's just taking the pressure off the players, and that's just the person he is. He's just taking the limelight off the players and taking the pressure off them. And all I can say is I feel sorry for Waterford and for Jarrick McGrath and the players.
Yeah, and I'd agree with Damien on that. And I think the facts bear that out. I think if it was intense training, as in conditioning training and that, you would see a different type of injury, vis-a-vis, let it be hamstring injuries or something like that, or maybe the wrong type of training, although that'll never happen at an inter-county level now. These are all breaks, I suppose, and things like that, that, you know, they could happen, to be honest with you. If you were going at half intensity, you're probably more likely to happen. So I agree with Damien. I think it is Derek. He's done this all the time in terms of taking pressure off his team. It's still a pretty young team, and I would really, really feel from this situation, you know, considering his history, where he is with Waterford at the minute, and I suppose, you know, he had an expectation, we'll say, at the close of last year, about stepping up and going to the final piece and winning an All Ireland and that, and also for the likes of Brick and those, you know, if anybody sets the tone for, you know, what you think of a Waterford hurler, it's probably Brick sets that tone in terms of, you know, real honesty and real decency about him, both on the field and off the field. I would agree with you. I think most hurling people have a soft spot for Waterford, and you know, it's unfortunate. But flip that coin on the other way. You cannot feel sorry for yourself, nor can Derek and the team feel sorry for themselves here. It is what it is, and you've got to man up and face that, and to have quality, and to have some replacements to go into that team. And to be honest with you, with a little bit of a tweak, and I'm not so sure that they can change their system a huge amount, but they can certainly tweak it a good bit to fit in some players that they have that might give them bring a different game to Limerick on Sunday. And that very fact could throw Tipperary off their guard as well, because Tipperary going into Limerick on Sunday would have expected a certain game plan from Waterford. It may not be that game plan now, and you know, in a perverse sort of way, it may help Waterford, and Waterford have some quality players. And I just reiterate that, and I know Derek won't be like that. You cannot feel sorry for yourself. This is tough business, and you've got to get on with the job.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like, I mean, if there's anything going, we'll go down to this a little bit more in the prediction section, but if anything's going in their favour, Tipperary are gone their third week in a row, and Offaly and Kilkenny were going their third week in a row last weekend, and they didn't exactly perform, you know, too great. So there's a lot of people complaining about that at the moment, where you know, Waterford will be playing their second one, Tip their third one, so it's not a level playing field on the, even though Waterford have more injuries, so it's actually a strange one.
Yeah, no, I think there's a couple of sort of nearly contradicting facts about where we are. And the thing about it is, this is the first year of an innovative championship that, you know, has caught a lot of the public imagination, and there's a lot of good things about it. But this is certainly one thing that, you know, you might want to discuss later on in terms of the break. And I suppose it's the unfairness about that.
Yeah.
And it's the, I suppose, even if there was no injuries, the fact that you need, you know, physiological recovery, but you also need psychological recovery, particularly if you've lost a game the previous Sunday. And, you know, having a weekend off to re-energise your dressing room, reset your players, reset your goals, maybe have an intervention or two at that weekend, maybe at a training camp or something like that, to refocus you for the next 2 weeks would be invaluable to you at that stage. And you know, some of the teams obviously don't have that.
Yeah, and some do have it, which doesn't seem fair. But in general, I don't want to go down the road of being negative about this championship, because like I was been saying on the podcast a lot, Damien, that hurling people should be counting their lucky stars. They've all the good teams playing each other week on week. They're getting double headers on the TV. Like, I mean, it's fairy tale stuff. The only thing that you might tweak is that week off and make it fair for everybody else. I was reading during the week, attendances in the Munster Championship have already equaled the entire championship last year and have three rounds left, and the Leinster Championship is the same. It's right up there based on attendances. So, like, I mean, this is a very, very positive championship, but you would have to take on board 4 weeks in a row in championship hurling is a lot to ask.
Yeah, well, it is a lot to ask, right? But that's the current championship, Colm.
Yeah.
And teams are just going to have to get on with it. Simple as that. They can be crying about it. It's an absolute dream championship. If you and I were back playing in our heyday again, and we were told that this was going to be the current championship, wouldn't we love it? That this thing about you know, playing 4 weeks in a row. All the teams, Colm, have their work done at the moment, right? They've all gone back early enough, done the conditioning, done the physical condition, there is now gone into mental preparation, all that stuff. This time of year, it's all you're doing is limbering up the bodies. You're playing matches, you're limbering up the bodies, just getting a little bit sharper, like just doing a little bit of shooting practice, and then it's all recovery. The work is all done, all you're doing is sharpening up. So this thing of teams being tired, never done. I don't know the answer to this, right? But I expect that the players and the management all meet up on the Monday after a Sunday championship match to do a recovery session. They probably do a light train session Tuesday or Wednesday, probably do another light, very, very light train session, maybe half an hour long on the Thursday stroke Friday, depending on whether you're playing on the Saturday or Sunday, and off they go again. The management team might have to tweak the team a little bit due to injuries or lad carrying knocks, but that's what the panel is all about. So like, they're on about the hard 4 weeks. Like, just they're playing four matches in a row. They've done it for the whole league campaign, and they're training during the league campaign. Where now they're not training, in my opinion, during the middle of the week. All they're doing is doing recovery and sharpening and tweaking up things, and maybe just putting in different people into different positions. For Waterford, regarding, we'll say, what do they do? You'd have to say, we'll say, regarding, we'll say, Derek McGrath. Maybe Derek McGrath, because he has so many injuries, and if Derek McGrath will get the job next year with Waterford, and I don't see why he wouldn't after the services after given, maybe it's an opportunity for Derek McGrath to really look at some younger players and throw them into the deep end and see how would they do in championship hurling. But as I said, I feel sorry for Derek McGrath, and I don't think there's a hurling person out there that wouldn't. Regarding during the week, I don't think it's an excuse, Colm, four matches in a row. The players now, they've all the recoveries, the masseuses, the everything, there's no excuses. They're either ready for championship or they're not.
I think that, Damien, there is a sub point to that, though. I think if all the teams were playing four Sundays in a row, it's equal.
That's the difference.
I think I wouldn't have a difficulty with that, and I agree with you. You know, the conditioning of players now, you play four Sundays in a row is no big deal to them, I think, and it's equal for everybody. But take, for example, you had won your first game and lost your second game, and the third game now is really, really critical to you, but you have a break in between. You can do a training camp on the Saturday or the Sunday and work through some things. Or, and I do agree with you, I would expect every manager now to have their game plan for the four games, you know, well rehearsed in advance. But that might change, or you might have a change of personnel for the third and fourth games. And the third game is so critical to you now. You've lost one and the previous Sunday, and I think that would be a very big, you know, big advantage to you if those sets of circumstances and conditions pertained. And I think you would get a great chance to re-energise your dressing room, maybe reshape your team for a different game plan on the following Sunday, and be able to put a little bit more emphasis on it. And I think, you know, like, you can just look at Dublin for the minute. It's a critical game coming up at the weekend for two teams here, but Dublin have had a chance to look at Offaly, what to do, and maybe rehearse a little bit more. And you know, you're only looking for small margins here. This game could be won by a point or two, and a little rehearsal of something could make a difference, and you have an opportunity to do that.
Yeah, no, exactly, I'd agree in that. 4 weeks in a row, Damien's right, isn't the end of the world, as long as everybody has to be doing it. And that's why you don't hear the same complaining throughout the league, is that that it's not a level playing field, and maybe we actually mentioned this on Monday's show, but it's been back kind of written about all week. Want to talk about the penalty in hurling, because Christy O'Connor had a very good piece on the RTÉ website about this, and he's talking about the advantage has swung back around to the takers, which is what, you know, penalties are all about. It shouldn't be, they should be in the advantage of the taker. There should be a good percentage chance that they're going to score. So there was 5 last weekend and 4 of them were scored. So he was talking about the average striking speed of penalties at intercounty level is between 140 and 150 kilometres per hour, which affords the goalkeepers a reaction time of around 500 milliseconds. So you might be wondering how fast that is. The blink of a human eye takes between 200 to 400 milliseconds. So it's just outside the speed of the blink of an eye a goalkeeper has to react to this. So, like, I mean, I don't know, do goalkeepers need to start rethinking this and go like soccer and actually guess? We see a lot of goalkeepers reacting to the penalty, and judging by that, Cheddar, that's never going to work. You're not going to reach it, because these lads are hitting corners now.
Look, I think the best goalkeepers in soccer don't be jumping around the place. You know, they make informed decisions on which side they're going to go, rather than just picking, I'm going to go left and take a chance on that. I think, first of all, I think it's good that Christy is commenting on this, because he's well informed to comment. He was a very, very, very good goalkeeper, and was understudied to one of the best goalkeepers ever in Clare when Clare were strong. So he's well informed to comment on this, and I know he's very, very well informed in coaching and all of that. And it's good to see the statistics. But look, goalkeepers are reading your body language. You know, they read an awful lot, and they'll see the previous history of takers. They'll get a lot of footage and all of the takers. I would expect goalkeeping coaches to have all of that available to them. Look at your body language and your footwork when you're going up to take it yourself to start to second guess. So in their mind, they're thinking well in advance, and you are talking about milliseconds here, but you're talking well in advance of their preparation to try and save this. I think what has happened, though, is that initially goalkeepers were saved a lot, because there was an expectations on free takers that this was easy. Just go up, put the ball down, pick a corner and stick it in it. And, you know, it was proven not to be easy. But I think as time has went on, free takers have become a little bit more experienced and a little bit maybe more relaxed on what they're doing and that, and maybe a little bit more rehearsed in doing it and that as well. It should be easy for to score the goal. But look across the quality of goalkeepers that are playing at the minute, and the work that they would do in advance of that, and looking at your technique and your style and where you normally hit it and the percentages and all of that, would be savage. And I would think that their goalkeeping coaches would be doing the same thing with him. So they're well prepared to make the stop. Look, it's a bullet, an absolute bullet coming at you. And to be honest with you, why you'd stand in goal in front of those is maybe a serious question to be asked in the first place. But I do see goalkeepers still saving some of these shots, and I think the stats might just change around a little bit and might fluctuate a little bit as the season goes on.
Just on the point of maybe the goalkeepers guessing the side, Damien, how easy or difficult is it to hide which side you're going to go for a hurler? Because Christy's saying the most natural strike for any player is to hit across their body, because that's kind of how to generate the most power.
Yeah, well, what most penalty takers will try to do, to just to explain it to the viewers, is if you're facing the ball and you're striking off your right, and the goalkeeper that you're striking is holding the hurl in his right hand, most people will go to that person's right. So okay, that the goalkeeper has to get the goalie hurl, the boss of the goalie hurl, across his body to try with it. A lot of them will go low and hard, right? So they have to get the goalie hurl across their body, which basically makes them work. That'll take roughly a second, and then get down low. So I don't know if you understand that.
No, I do, yeah.
That's basically what a lot of the... So it would say, for example, TJ Reid could be striking, he could be facing him. He'll try to put the ball on the opposite side of the natural holding position of the boss of the hurl. And that's what they try to do. But, I'm waiting for the day this goalkeeper, you know, tries to do a little bit of psychology.
Bruce Grobler.
Not Bruce Grobler, but imagine if, for example, one of the penalty takers were taking the free, and the goalkeeper just stood solely on the right hand side and left all his left hand side of his goals opened, and to see would he strike it to the left hand side or would he strike it at him, just because, like, the law of averages, they should be scoring the goals. So, but that's just the way a lot of penalty takers try to strike the ball away from the goalkeeper's natural holding his hand position where the boss hurl is, the opposite side, which makes him try and move his body, move his boss of his hurl and get down low, whatever. So that's what happened. Look, it's great when they work out, and when they work out it's brilliant, but on a 1-to-1 basis I do feel that you should be scoring your goal. You have to remember thereafter Brendan has come 3 people in the goal mouth down to 1. And I know you have to strike the ball from the 21-yard line, but all penalty takers are all top-class strikers of the ball. That's why they're taking them. So I think they should be scoring them. But that's what they try to do, Colin. They try to do the opposite side to the goalie hurt.
Yeah, and I think what Damien has explained there probably might explain the change in stats as well, that not alone are the goalkeepers studying the penalty takers, but the penalty takers are studying the goalkeepers. And certainly, Damien is right, you would always look at, you know, what's the strong side of the goalkeeper, particularly the way he holds the hurley, and you would aim the other side, because that split second, as Chris has explained,
yeah,
would be worthwhile. There's one other thing to throw in again. An awful lot of these penalty takers and free takers now are able to bend the ball in flight. And if you remember a couple of years ago, I can't actually remember the Waterford free taker that scored a goal against Cork.
Paul Flynn.
I couldn't think of his name. Damien scored a goal against Cork, and I said the Rock's still looking at that ball. Yeah. Where the hell did that go?
That was here. Milan got sent off.
That's correct.
That was
in the final.
But
yeah.
Look, so they're able to, in 21 metres, they're able to bend the ball like tennis players are able to do it now, and because the rims are what they are, and so on. So I would expect that, you know, considering the technique has got better and the penalty taker may very well be studying the goalkeeper, and you would expect that the percentages would increase. But having said that, I do think, you know, goalkeepers are just a completely different breed and they will save a lot of these shots.
Yeah, no, they will. But Damien, so just to maybe not Bruce Grobler, or maybe not to be going over to one side like and messing altogether, but what about kind of halfway between that? So TJ Reid goes down to pick the ball up. So he's watching watching the ball. Yeah. So by the time he looks up to strike, then to be over one side, to actually predict. So you're there before
that's
the
exactly
ball.
It, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just to try something new. Do you know what? You're trying to bluff the free taker, you know, and you're trying to get inside his head. And if you were moving left to right, the next thing, when you're just going bin and down to right, you start going over to one side of the corner of the goal. The next thing, maybe when he hits it, the next thing, if you actually hit it, you know, pretty, we'll say, half height over to the far side, you dive, you could end up blocking it. Now, you could look like an awful idiot, but she's a bit pet off, you know, but it's just, yeah. I just can't understand how goalkeepers aren't trying. Just try something different.
Yeah.
Like this, they're standing there in the middle of the pitch, middle of the goal, the next thing they're trying to block a bullet, where if they try something different, and I think it will happen. Like, United manager, two years ago.
What manager?
The Man United manager.
David Moyes.
Van Gaal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Didn't he take off his goalkeeper during the penalties, or just before the penalties, and put in his sub goalie?
Yeah.
To get inside the heads at, when he was manager of the Holland in the World Cup.
He did. He was lauded
you
for
know,
it.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, it worked, didn't it?
Yeah. No, exactly. But this is the point I'm trying to make on this, is that in Gaelic football now, the penalty was taken in to make it easier, and that was the right thing to do. So it's more like the distance of soccer now. So now goalkeepers in Gaelic football, you see them almost like soccer. You can put them the wrong way because they have to guess, because the reaction time is too slow, is too short. Now, not all of them do. Some of them wait till it's kicked and try to go for it. So David Clark, he's such a big man, he waited with Dermot Connolly in the All-Ireland final, you know, instead of guessing. But I know Dermot Connolly's go-to penalty is down bottom left. I would have guessed, you know, and been there before it. But it's a game of cat and mouse, Cheddar, really, isn't it? So, like, I mean, I do think we'll see one of the more flamboyant goalkeepers, like Anthony Nash, just going across to the side he thinks it's going to go on and just batting it back out.
Yeah, you could, and you could see some of the old style stuff coming as well. There could be sods through at the penalty taker, or it could be a hurl through at him or something like that. It's difficult to save. I think what would be interesting, and I'd love to see Christy do this, is to look at and bear in mind, you know, who he is and his knowledge of footwork and positioning in the goals and all of that. I know Christy, and I know he coaches goalkeepers, and he's a very, very high intellect about how to coach goalkeepers and that. And it would be very interesting to see him follow this up. and look at the stance of goalkeepers for the full year maybe, and look at even looking at what Damien is saying, you know, so where can you gain an advantage here? Is it better off to stand your ground in the goal, try and study the goalkeeper, look at his previous shots and so on, or can you, you know, well, definitely some free takers you can definitely upset by doing something like that. So I think there's more to be gained out of this, and I think coaches would be very interested to see what Christy has to say on this.
Okay, just to finish up on this with something else Christy said about TJ Reid, and I need your help on this, Damien and Cheddar. It's about, he says Reid is a he's talking about Reid is one of the fellas who has the ability not just to generate power going across his body but also to the other side. But he says Reid is a special talent, but that flatter strike where he can generate huge power by not needing to fully swing across his body is what makes him so lethal. I didn't know what a flatter strike is. Am I supposed to know what a flatter strike is, Damien?
I have no idea what that means.
Right, do you, Cheddar?
I suppose, look at the front foot strike first. You know, a lot of people would say it comes from the shoulders. It actually comes from the hips and the core region as such. But the stand-up strike is going to come from, you know, you're not going to wind up your body to strike it. So I'm assuming he's meaning the arm strike as such.
Rather than
the power coming from the middle part of your body, the power part of your body. And then, of course, we've sort of lost a little bit of the back foot strike and the back foot power strike. And again, it's probably related to this a little bit. You're not putting your hips power into striking the ball. And you see it, a lot of cornerbacks do that. Martin Hanemy was an expert at it, jabbing the ball, going into his own corner. And yet he was able to get a strike to clear his own half-hour line nearly. And, you know, it's an art that's lost a little bit, maybe because we're just all getting the ball now and working the ball through the lines rather than striking it and that. But I'm assuming that's what he means.
Yeah, no, exactly, because Ken McGrath and Tommy Walsh were great exponents of that as well, weren't they? Over the shoulder off the back foot.
That's
but they,
true, yeah.
they're both kind of saying now they wouldn't last in the modern game because no manager wants them to do that, because you have to actually look at where, not a terrible thing to say, that Tommy of course did adapt anyway, so two players like them
look great. They, players adapt to anything.
Yeah,
they would adapt. Didn't two players adapt to any era?
Yeah, they would, of course, to be brilliant in any era. Right, lads.
But just before you go off that, I think that's a very interesting discussion, because a lot of the excitement comes from that. And I often bring up this for argument's sake. What do supporters want to look at? They want excitement, they want to be edge of their seat. And a lot of that comes from, you know, the more competitive balls or the more competitive phases of play there is in a match, the better. And a lot of that comes from what you've just described. You know, Tommy Welsh going into the corner, jabbing to the hand, two more steps and he lands at 60, 70 metres up the field or maybe 100 metres up the field. And now it's a contested ball again.
Yeah.
And the crowd are injured on the end of the seat. But actually, it mightn't win you a huge amount of matches. It won't take any an awful lot of them. But in the next decade, it mightn't win you a lot. You've got to control the possession of the game. But that takes a little bit away from the excitement of the game then, I think. And, you know, supporters certainly need to decide what do they want. Do they want their team to play in a way that gives them a better chance of winning? It doesn't guarantee them a better chance of winning, or do they want to see exciting hurling?
Yeah, that's it. Well, that's the difficult one, Damien, because in football the whole conversation is now that the crowd aren't getting into it because there's a lot of hand passing outside a screen. And I went to the Mayo Galway game and I was beside an Owlstock Galway fan, and he was losing his absolute mind at Galway for not driving it in. And we've all heard driving it in. I can only imagine in hurling it's the same now, where the traditionalists are, let it in, will you? You know, because you hear it in football, I'm sure you hear it twice as much in hurling.
Yeah, which, see, what has happened, Colin, the game has changed so much in both hurling and football. And the day of getting the ball at the full back line and driving out with it like the rock and hitting it 130 yards down the edge of the square, like that, you very seldom see one of them pieces of play anymore. They're all about working the lines, play through the phases, you know, get the ball in the full back line, give it out to the half back if there's someone free, maybe he give a stick pass to Neil or to the half forward, and if the shot has gone, take it. And then in football it's the exact same. Like, you lose possession in football, right? It's basically everyone has to turn around and run back towards their own goals as quickly as possible. I think there's something like a 10 second rule to get as many bodies behind the ball, and then you basically play with 12 bodies behind the ball and you have 3 forwards up front, and when the ball goes up front everyone has to run. So the game has changed, and I even see it there, even my own dad, he's often hearing me say, well, let it in, hit the ball and let it in. This is what you get from all the older crowd, you know, they're taking too much out of it and all this. But the game has just changed so much. Like, and sure, like, was everyone giving out about the Derek McGrath's hurling system and the David Fitzgerald hurling system? And then when Cork came a couple of years ago, and it was all, we'll say, the running and the hand pass game, you know, with the Donal Cusick system, like, it's all, but the whole game has changed. And just to say that as well, Colin, you know, we're saying the whole thing has changed. Brian Cody has changed his philosophy and change the system, where one time it used to be route one and win your own ball and win your hard ball, but he had to change the system after the first two league games, you know. And they analysed this on the Sunday game, where they started playing through the lines and finding and hitting it back to their goalkeeper, and then he cross fielding the ball on. You know, so you have to play at your strengths. That's the long and short of this conversation. You just have to play at your strengths. You've got big men inside you and you can hit it in long anyway at all, and they'll catch it, and you have two speedy corner forwards that work off the break. Do it.
Yeah.
But if you don't have them players, you just have to play at your strengths. That's the long and short.
Yeah, and the Owl Stock are just going to have to accept it, and that's it. Right,
yeah,
we'll be
back. Some of these Owl Stock don't even have Sky. So how are they going to see the matches?
Well, that's a different debate. We'll be whinging about that on Monday here after the Sky doubleheader on Saturday evening. Right, listen, we'll be back and take a look at one of those games that's on Sky.
Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I'll tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. Let's chill the beans. 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 Let's chill the beans. There still is a lot of work to be done yet. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans. But I'll tell you, give us a year and a bit. Just give us a small bit of time. Just give us a small bit of time. Let's chill the beans.
Yeah, so the big one at the weekend, lads, as far as I'm concerned, and I'm producing the show, so this is what we're talking about, is Wexford and Galway, and that's in Wexford Park on Saturday night. This one is on Sky. And for me, this league game was really interesting game. Wexford beat them. Dermot O'Keefe scored 3 points from play from the half-back line. Foley on the other side scored a point. And, you know, they kind of rattled maybe Galway with their tactics. And one thing about Wexford Cheddar is that they're a big, strong physical team. And we saw how Galway were able to dominate Kilkenny physically. They won't be able to do that to Wexford. Is that fair?
I think that's fair, but I don't think we can draw comparisons with a game, you know, a number of weeks back in mid quarter final the league or whatever. I think it was 123-23 point. It was good scoring, good game in that in Wexford Park. But it was just a little bit too far back. I mean, Galway are a completely different team now. And look, Galway were a big team. Wexford are a big team as well. You know, so I don't think size and physique, you know, that one's going to have an edge over the other. But I think I agree with you. I think it's first of all, it's a massively important game and a hugely important game for Wexford, because Damien and myself were just discussing off air. The next game for Wexford is Kilkenny and Nolan Park on the following Saturday night. And, you know, whereas they're, you know, showing up very well now and playing very well and, you know, coming off a really, really good win against Offaly and, more importantly, a really good performance against Offaly. But they could very well end up with only 4 points and not in a great place at that stage. So I think it's a huge important game. I think it'll be a cracking game. I think you will have contrasting styles, obviously. I think Galway have already learned a little bit about the style against, you know, it's not dissimilar to the Waterford style in the All-Ireland last year. But to be honest with you, for long periods in that game, Galway struggled a little bit about what to do. And, you know, this is in Wexford Park, where you would expect Wexford to you know, have really honed this style in Wexford Park and that. So I think, just look, opening remarks, it's going to be a brilliant, brilliant game, and I think it's a great test for Wexford. And, you know, if they were to beat the All-Ireland Championship in their own backyard, a massive boost to them then for the rest of the Championship.
Yeah, Damien, have Wexford got kind of tactics that might trouble Waterford? I know Cheddar's just mentioned Galway in the All-Ireland final, but Wexford have this attacking half back line. Can that throw the likes of Joe Cooney and these fellas, who might not like having to track these lads off their game?
Well, yeah, the one thing I will say, this is a game that's going to be a very, very tough game for Galway. That's number one, right? Number two, it's in Wexford Park, right? So it's in the advantage of Wexford. Wexford will be very, very well prepared, for the, right? And the second thing is they're well prepared, they're well conditioned, they're well trained, the whole lot. And Davy Fitz will have these boys well motivated. And when you have a team that's fit and motivated, anything is possible. That's the first thing to say about this, right? Now, this is a very interesting game because whoever wins this game, right, is basically in the Leinster final. It has one foot in the Leinster final. Now, if Wexford could get one over Galway, that will make it very interesting then between, we'll say, maybe even second and third place, right? Because that makes the Kilkenny-Wexford game even bigger. So, and then Galway, then will they have to go all guns blazing again to beat Dublin to make certain that they're in as well. It's going to be a really, really good game, so this. Down in Wexford Park, it was interesting. I read an article there about Damien Fitzhenry, and he said, you know, he feels that this team is making progress, but he feels the need to win silverware to show that it's making progress. And I probably would agree with that, but I think they got to a Leinster final last year. Wexford did, you know, on merit. That's the first thing to say, and it's absolutely brilliant that we're talking about Wexford in this manner, that they've come good for that in the last couple of years, that they're now competing and competing at a level that we're asking, can they upset Galway, the All-Ireland champions? So it's a game that I'm really looking forward to. Will Davy Fitz have tactics? Yes. Will Wexford trouble Galway? Yes. Is it in Wexford Park? Yes. Will the home crowd get behind the Wexford team? Yes. And the big thing is Davy Fitz will have these boys absolutely motivated and hopping to the last. It's a very, very dangerous game for Galway. Galway are a seasoned team, seasoned campaigners, very, very settled team, but it's a very dangerous game. And yes, Wexford can trouble Galway down in Wexford Park.
I think the talk about Wexford progressing, and I saw Damien Fitzhenry during the week is on Damien's line saying that they need to win a Leinster to have progressed or definitely get to an All-Ireland semi-final or final. And I don't know, does it have to be as black and white as that to have actually gone further? I would make the argument that Wexford have improved and progressed this year regardless of necessarily on paper making it further, if you know what I mean, Cheddar.
I suppose I just maybe wanted to take that in context. I mean, obviously, Damien Fitzhenry is a, you know, a Wexford idol, and first of all, it's a Wexford man and a Wexford supporter, and wants to see success for his county. And you know, sometimes that emotion can just sort of misguide you a little bit in terms of what you want to say. But I was surprised at what he said, and I think what he said and maybe what he meant to say might have been different things, because you know, talking about results and all of that is not what you want to talk about. All great players know how difficult, and Damien more than anybody knows how difficult in Wexford it is to manage expectations and to manage performance and to go away and win things. Otherwise, in that, an awful lot of players would have an awful lot more All-Ireland medals. But I was more surprised that he didn't focus in on the performance and the, you know, the key parts of the performance that needs to keep improving, rather than actually looking and talking about the results. And because I think, you know, results do not come before performances. And I think when he was looking for improvement, when Damien himself as a Wexford man was looking for improvement, he should have been talking about the different aspects, performances and development of the Wexford game plan and that type of stuff, rather than just saying, you know, boldly saying, oh, we need to win something, because yeah, it's not that easy. And it certainly does put pressure on your team, there's no doubt about that, and it has put pressure on Wexford. And I suppose I'm also, there's a little bit of a trend here as well, that generally speaking the former players in the county, and we've seen some other counties do this as well, you know, they nearly always make these comments when there's a person from outside of their own county managing the team, or it's an outside management team or something like that. You know, so I don't think it has been helpful, to be honest with you. And you know, I suppose you'll rarely hear Kilkenny, I know there's a couple of exceptions here, but you'll rarely hear Kilkenny or JJ or any of the lads, you know, making those type of comments about Kilkenny, and you know, look at the success that they have had.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. It's difficult to know, Damien. Like, I mean, I would see Rory O'Connor having come in, I would see Paddy Foley is new this year. Like, I mean, Wreck in the corner back. Like, I mean, they look like they have moved on that little bit. And the wing backs, I know Dermot O'Keefe did it a lot last year, but like, I mean, he's almost doing it with abandon this year. Like, there's subtle changes with Wexford that they're moving on.
Yeah.
And it might not, like, even if they don't win a Leinster final, if they get into it again and maybe they get closer to Galway, like, I mean, it is a lot of pressure from an ex-player and legend to say, look, well, yeah, if they don't get further than last year, it's not progress.
Yeah, well, what they're doing is they're putting pressure on the players to try and make progress, you know. But just saying there about Jermaine O'Keefe, just to say that his fitness levels are incredible. He's able to go up and down the field. But you're asking, has Wexford improved? In my eyes, yes. Last year they were very, very defensive, you know. But now this year they've gone defensive and in now into attack. So that where David Fitz allows the players the license to take off with the ball like this, and like they've got two half backs scoring, two in the backs. You know, Matthew Hanlon scored with a 2 points in last year's Leinster final. No issues either. I think they have young O'Connor there and out. He's a very, very good player. I think it'd be wrong was Lee Chin who's actually adding to his last year's form and continued on. You know, I think this Wexford team is a good team. You know, it's what's at stake at the weekend at Colin is, right? Like I suppose it's unfair to say Wexford need to win Leinster. He's, at the moment, Galway are in Leinster, who are the All-Ireland champions, who's a fine team, who are odds-on favourites to go win the All-Ireland again. So there's that disadvantage that the best team in the country is in their province, right? But what's at stake here is if Wexford can beat Galway down in Wexford Park, right, it makes it their last game against Kilkenny a little bit easier, right? But if they lose on Saturday night, it's a must win for them against Kilkenny on the last day, which is down in Nolan Park, which is basically decided between second and third place. And that's the big thing. Second, obviously, enough goes into the final. Third place is the third team to go out of the group. So there's a lot at stake. But I still think that Davy Fitz, I don't know whether they'll win it, but I think it'll be a great game and they will be absolutely motivated to the last. He'll absolutely have them hopping. And that's what Davy Fitz is all about with his championship team. And this is a game I think he's been gearing to.
One person he needs to motivate for me is Conor McDonald, because this lad's a superstar. Like, I mean, and he's a heavy scorer. Against Offaly, I think, what was it they scored? Was it 317? He got 1-1. Like, he hasn't been flying it last year. And Wexford need him so badly, Cheddar. Like, he's their Patrick Horgan. You know what I mean? He needs to be hitting regular scores. And for whatever reason, I think it was down in the at the Wexford-Kilkenny game last year in Wexford Park, the game Wexford won. He was playing wing half forward some of the time. Do you know what I mean? Like, is all this rotation and kind of tactics that Davy comes with maybe suiting a traditional number 13 or number 15 like Conor McDonald?
I think you need to look at why he was using him there. Conor McDonald is a massive, he has a massive ear game, and it may very well be that their puck out,
they were hitting puck outs to him,
was built around that. And it may very well be, look, let's go with this first 20 minutes and let's change our puck out plan for the next 20 or that. So you know, you'd really need to get under the skin of the game to understand why he was playing where he is. But I'd say about Conor McDonald, I mean, I know Conor McDonald very well. I've coached teams against him at minor level and at senior level. Incredible talent, left-handed hurler, but he may very well become more of a team player now. So so have we counted his assists? Have we counted his hooks and blocks and all of those things? So he may very well be a much more important player to Wexford now than he was, you know, when, say, maybe a couple of years ago when he was regularly getting, you know, goals in games and that, and sometimes some spectacular goals and that. So I think, and on the other side of that as well, you know, there was a time there when he was Wexford's only forward. He's not anymore, and that, you know, proves where Wexford are going. The one thing I would say about Wexford, I suppose, are a couple of things. And I suppose I just want to steer a little bit clear from generalizations here, first of all. But in general, they do need to be a little bit more consistent in performance against good teams. And I think that's why the test against Galway is really good. On the other flip side of that, I think Galway have tools to deal with the Wexford game plan, and certainly their mobility of their forwards, particularly their long range shooters from the middle third. They've certainly upped their tackling rate in forwards and that, in terms of letting the ball out, and they've a tight defence that reads the game very well. So I think Galway just naturally have a lot of tools in their bag to be able to deal with the sweeper system and the other parts. It's not just necessarily a sweeper system, the other parts of the way Wexford play. Based on that, I think if they bring their A game to Wexford Park, I just think they may have a little bit too much for Wexford at the minute. Although I take what Damien is saying, you know, home advantage, big crowd behind you, you know, if it's a you know, if it's a strong, tough match, you know, Wexford will love it and Wexford people will love it. One other thing to throw into the mix, I think that previous game was played in Wexford Park, and I remember Murray Markin at the time on this show that that's a fantastic thing for Micheál to have, to be able to go down there, time his how long it gets down there, if to stay overnight, if there's a need to stay overnight, you know, familiarise yourself with the puck around place and all of that, and those things are important in big games like this.
Yeah, no, they are. Just to continue on the Conor McDonald thing, Damien, is that maybe Cheddar's right, that Davy doesn't want to be dependent on one fella, and then if one fella doesn't play well, then their whole thing, you know, falls apart. 10 of their players, 10 of their starting players, I just double counted it to make sure I was right, scored against Offaly. Now I know there's a one sided win, but this is a feature of Wexford's play, that an awful lot of their players are getting on the scoreboard, so it's not going through just one player.
Yeah, well, my own opinion on it is McDonald is a very, very good player. He's a fine player, and he's a very young player, right? Just to give him his due, he's very young yet, so he's still a lot of hurling to do. Is he in the level of the Patrick Horgan and these guys, would say, in Cork? The answer is no, and that's no disrespect to him, but his day will come, right? That's number one. But you're saying there that there's 10 scoring forwards, 10 scoring players for Wexford. A lot of that is because you take the likes of McDonald's is coming, right? And he has to be very patient, and Wexford play an awful lot of hurling out around the 8 column,
yeah,
where they're getting the balls, even they're attacking half backs, attacking up the field, they're giving 1-2s, you know, with O'Keefe and all this sort of, and shooting balls over the bar. They often find Leach in there in around the centre forward channel, and once again popping balls back out, where McDonald is being told, you know, staying around the edge of the square, live off breaks, or if there's a roof on ball that you're to get onto it, you know. So I suppose his game, I suppose, has taken a back step in that regard, right? But like, Davy fits one mind if he's one player that is only getting a 7 out of 10 performance as opposed to 9.5 if the rest of the team is putting in a shift as well and also getting scores. So, you know, just on McDonald, he's a young player, you know, he will get better as the years go on, right? But he's not at the level of the Horgans, which Horgan is a super player. It's gas maybe that we're even comparing him to something like this, but if they play an awful lot of hurling out around the middle of the field, in the middle 8, short stick passes, working up the field, carrying, drawing a man, showing the half pass and working. But just on, you were saying the Wexford game plan, just to say this, right? Wexford plays a sweeper, as we well know, right? But Galway also has the likes of Aidan Hart, that has played the sweeper system last year and has played it very well against Wexford in the Leinster final and against Waterford in the All-Ireland final. So it's not going to be a case that Galway won't be used to this. And Galway, as I said many a time, have a top-class management team. They're so witty. They're a youthful management team that analyse game plan A, B and C, and what happens if this happens. And they have also a huge amount of players they can use off their sub-bench. So I just think that Galway are just such a good team at the moment, such a settled team, that Wexford, it will be hard for Wexford to win, but Wexford are at home in Wexford Park. They need to be bringing their A game to it. But it's just, you have to remember, they're playing Galway with All-Ireland champions, who are a very fancy team this year again this year.
Yeah, unfortunately it was me that compared them to Patrick Horgan. Not necessarily comparing their importance maybe to their team. Just quickly on Conor McDonald, because that was an interesting point that Damien made, and Wexford's style of play is a lot of players out around the middle of the third getting free and scoring, and him maybe not getting the possessions that he used to, or maybe coming up through the underage ranks, getting used, because he's so good in the air, getting used to a good long traditional ball that's gone out of the game now. And maybe Conor McDonald is trying in his own head to adapt and change his game to suit this new style of play, Cheddar. Would that be fair?
Colm, just to say, and as well, just to remember that last year Conor McDonald was their free taker. Right now, he wasn't a natural free taker as well, right? And he was not, I'd even go as far as saying he wasn't an 8 out of 10 free taker. So Davy Fitz has taken that free taking role off him, and he's given the free taking role to like the Leach in and long range frees to different guys, right? So basically, he's out of the camera and out of the scoring zone constantly. So often, you can often get a lad that could score 12 points, right? And he still only score one or two from play, where now he's not taking the frees this year. So now he's still only getting his one or two from play, and he's not getting his free taking.
Yeah.
So often media forget that, yeah, he's the free taker. He's taking the place balls and he's scoring 10 points, right? And next thing he's scoring 2 from play, that's 12. Now this year he's only scoring his 2 points, or he's 1-1 or whatever it is. So he could be doing as much as he was last year from open play, only that he's taken the free-taking responsibility often because he wasn't an out-and-out very reliable free-taker. I don't even know if he was an 8 out of 10 free-taker. And sometimes that's something to bear in mind as well. And maybe there's a little bit of a confidence issue from doing that from.
I think that's a really good point, actually, Damien. Like a lot of free takers, they like take the frees because it actually gives them confidence in general play in terms of getting on the ball and that. Now, look, it can work in the opposite way as well. And I think Damien make a really good point as well in terms of and Willie makes that point as well in terms of the Wexford system. If you have wing backs that are bombing up the field and scoring a number of points, you've got to screen that defence because you cannot leave that gap behind you. So you're going to have half hour sliding back into their position. They may not go back the whole way to cover your exact position, but they're definitely back in a defensive area. So if you may very well under different systems have been a free scoring wing forward or something like that, but you're just not in the scoring range in lots of periods of the matches, and instead of that your wing back might be robbing a couple of pints that you would have got yourself. I think there's one other thing I'd like to comment on as well. I'm delighted to see Liam O'McGovern back in a Wexford jersey. I rate him very, very highly as a forward. He's a very, very pacey forward, and he's a particular penchant for being able to come out under the dropping ball, sniff around the front of it and then turn and sprint for goal. He's a very, very quick player. He's gone through an ACL injury, actually. I think it's his second one.
Yeah.
And I'm just delighted to see him on the field. And I think in general, I think Wexford probably do need, O'Connor was a great addition to him, but they may need another scoring forward, a very efficient scoring forward, the likes of John McGrath type player, for them to really make the crossover here to win All-Irelands and that. But he would be a massive addition to them if he can just steer clear of injuries and get in and get going with the team.
Yeah, Liam O'McGovern, Davey will know all about him because he was magic the year for Wexford when the Big Clare in the match and the replay down there that year when Wexford got the good run. I'm a big fan of his as well. That's fantastic seeing him back. Quickly on this, just finish up, Damien, is I was reading the match report of the last day, and I take Cheddar's point that you can't read too much into it, but the Galway and Wexford team are very, very similar now. I know it's a league game and they're at different stages of the season, so Galway will be a different prospect. One thing that stood out to me was Davy Fitz hailed the brilliance of his young midfield pairing of Rory O'Connor and Kevin Foley. So I had a look straight away to see what the Galway midfield pairing was, and it was Cohen and Burke. So I was very surprised to see Davy hailing his midfield up against such a formidable midfield. So, when you see the layout of the Wexford team, you often think Rory O'Connor's playing in the forwards. But, he was at midfield that day along with Kevin Foley and did really well.
Oh, well, and that is a very good midfield. So it is, but you like the David Burke and Johnny Cohen now have been there for this is their third season as a midfield pair, and they teach together in Knockaway. So they're, they compare notes and they probably have a huge understanding of the role, where David Fitz has a midfield, but he has a midfield of two, but technically at times it's a five-man midfield because he brings his half forward out into the middle of the field where it's crowding the centre of the pitch, and everything. I always remember, I'll just give an example of we played Kilkenny in Leinster in our very, very first game in Leinster. I was marking Jackie Turl in Tullamore, right? And the first 10, 12, 14 minutes, we absolutely blisked Kilkenny, so it is in that the first quarter. And I always remember the full back line for Kilkenny, including Jackie Turl, screaming at the half back line and screaming at the midfield half to pull it back. And basically what they wanted to do was they wanted to lessen the space in the backs and create space up front. And after a few minutes, and as they did, and they all started pulling back bit by bit in the pull. And I remember Kilkenny got a goal down the far end with Richie Power scoring a goal, so he did, which brought him right back into the game and on the Winton beaters, because that's what Davy wants to do as well. He wants to congest the middle third in particular. So at times, we can talk about the two midfielders, and the two players he's talking about are excellent hurlers, and I'm not going to doubt that. And they're getting scores, and they're great workers, and they're great stick hurlers, and all that, right? But he congests the middle so that it's very crowded, there's lots of traffic, there's always support, there's lads always helping. We'd say if a lad's in trouble, if a lad is one and a half back line is going back on his back foot, that there's a midfielder there to help him or an extra man. So that's how Davy fits, and he tries to create space inside, so that's just the way it is. But they are two good midfielders, there's no doubt about that.
I think that's very interesting, Damien, because that's the real, I suppose it's the rehearsing of that the whole time, and obviously overlaying on that the distribution and that the ball that you're going to put into space inside, and is critical, and you can just guess for a minute about how you would play at that type of a game if you had a Tipperary full forward line of Callan and Jason and John McGrath and that type of quality forwards inside. It's interesting, actually, it brings up another discussion, really. How do you set up against the sweeper? And look, there's different ways of doing this, and you know, there's no right way, because you really got to look at the type of player that you have. But I was actually up in Dunloy with Leash and Antrim a fortnight ago, and bear in mind this game is in Antrim's own home field in Dunloy, and well, it's a club field, but it is in their county, and there was a strong breeze blowing down the field. I'm not so sure who won the toss, but Antrim were playing with the breeze in the first half, and it was a nice hurling breeze. It wasn't carrying the ball too far, you know. It was advantageous to you, yeah. And Leash set up a sweeper with Paddy Purcell at centre back, and Antrim sent their own sweeper up the field to keep him busy. So playing with the breeze, you had seven players in their half the field, or in the Leash half the field, you were seven and they are seven, and very, very little space to play. The other side of that, of course, really suited Leash, because now there's an awful lot of space up the other end. You might not have had a breeze behind you, but you had an awful lot of space to put ball into. And look, Damien knows better than anybody as a forward. That's all you need. Once you get to the ball first and you get the ball, the defender's got, it's difficult for him to dispossess you, and he's likely to defend you. And he's likely to defend you more than anything else, because he knows I've less defenders around me here in terms of actually covering for me if my man breaks clear. So if you gather the ball in a situation like that with five defenders on five, and there's that much space around you, and you turn and take on your man, your defender is going to commit freeze. And that's what happened in this game. Leash were 4-1 down. Antrim sent up a player, and Leash came in at half time 3 points up. It was the winning of the game up there, and a very, very important game for them. And I'm not saying that sending up your sweeper on top of the other man wouldn't work every day, but you'd need to be very, very careful about how you actually handle that.
Yeah, it's a very offensive move. I've seen it happen before in Gaelic football, and sometimes I wonder why, if a team's a strong favourite, they don't do it more often, because you would prefer the matches evened up. And even if you send up on the sweeper, you don't have to stay up there. You can play, head out to the wing and open it up a little bit more. But it's a very offensive move, and I think the conservative nature of GAA managers, Damien, they just don't do that. You always see, how many times do you see when a team has a man sent off, where do they play the extra man? They play him covering his full back line. I'd like to see the extra man used standing out on the half forward line on his own, and make the other team have to take off a forward and bring on a back. You know what I mean? Knock them off. Every manager will leave the spare man in a conservative way when he might not, you know, that's just the way managers seem to work.
Yeah, and Cheddar is saying there, it's interesting, Cheddar, because with last year's podcast, I think we had the same debate. So we had wondering about the sweeper and what would you do. And I said on the show that, you know, every sweeper, every manager that has a sweeper wants a particular sweeper to do the role. And in my opinion, the best way to mark that sweeper is to man mark the sweeper that they want. And send up your cornerback and man mark whoever it's going to be, you know, on a given day, and then see what the game plan is. Right? That would mean, then, yes, there will be seven forwards down one end and there'll be five up the other end. But wouldn't it be interesting to see just if that tactic happened in Championship Ireland, what would the likes of the Davy Fitzes or the Derek McGraths do if their sweeper was being man marked? But I agree as well what you said, Colin. You know, if a man gets sent off, what to do? Or to go and to put the player right in front of the full back line. He minds the house and don't let any goals in. Whereas you said, if we played in midfield, stroke in the half forward line and let him be screaming for puck outs there because he's on his own, or it might free up some other man and play it very attacking. I would do that in a chance to run it and see what happens. But sometimes I wonder, why don't lads just man mark the opposition sweeper and see what happens?
I think, Damien, no. I think there's two different things here. I think, I mean, look, if it was myself, I would definitely man-mark their sweeper, but I would use another forward to do it, and I'd force them to play a player who's not used to playing sweeper in that role. And I think it'd be very risky to send your extra man in your defence up on him. I would actually pull out another forward to play on the sweeper, and because it'll definitely break down their style of play.
Yeah.
And, you know, generally speaking, sweeper, you take Sean Murphy. He has always been the sweeper. For, and you mentioned yourself about Aidan being the Galway sweeper. They know how to play the role, and there's particular skill sets that you will have to be able to play that role, particularly if they're playing that role in front of the D. Some of them, like when you see Owen O'Donnell playing for Dublin, doesn't really play a sweeper. He sort of plays as a defender, just mopping up all around the defence and that. But I think, look, a lot really, I mean, I'm going to defend managers here, Woolly. A lot depends on where you are in the game.
Yeah.
It would be fairly, if you were 9 or 10 points up, I don't think it would be intelligent to open up your back line for the concession of goals and that. See out the game, win the game. That's what it's all about. I think the other thing is, if you were playing some of the top teams and you're suffering from a little bit of confidence, either within your county for a number of years or anything like that, you have got to build confidence in your team. And one way you're going to drain confidence is giving away some, open goals and that. And, some people might say, well, health or luck go for the game. But look, the statistics have proved that in these particular situations, going for the game doesn't give you anything. And building slowly, having patience, and that type of stuff is the only way that you can actually build confidence in your team, and then results will follow.
Okay, up next, we'll do Paddy Power's predictions.
Won't tell you, there's no point in papering over like that. And it is extremely tough. I won't tell you, but again, it's not about me or Morris or anyone else. It's about Waterford.
We waited so long. I know I've seen it, one of your tweets yesterday said 6 years. It's obviously a leash, man, but it's a long 6 years for us there, and we're absolutely thrilled.
I remember after Leinster final, I was in the morning. My nephew was out in the lawn and he was baking freeze with his socks pulled up, pretending to be TJ Reid, and he fairly brought me back down to earth that day. Anyway.
Right, so Paddy Power's predictions, lads. We're going to start with Wexford Galway really, really fast, because we've talked about that a lot. Wexford are 5-2, according to Paddy Power. Galway 2-5. Would you go along with that? And who do you fancy? Cheddar, you first.
I have to go with Galway. The quality of their team, their settled team, but I think there'll be absolutely nothing in it. I think it'll be a really, really good game as well, and a tactical game. I'd really look forward to seeing that game and seeing, what makes each team tick and how does the other management react to that. I think it'll be a very, very interesting game. Galway, I think, have just too much forward quality and too much scoring power, and Davey makes a very good point. Too many quality players to be able to take off the bench to be able to change the game.
Yeah, I don't know about the two of you, but I find Wexford and Waterford, even Waterford last year, when they're playing other teams, I find those games much more interesting to talk about, because there's kind of tactical battles and stuff, and I like those conversations rather than maybe the more orthodox kind of teams. What about you, Damien? I presume you'll be going for Galway here.
I'm going to go for Galway, but it's going to tell Wexford where they are at this stage and where they've developed.
Yeah,
Wexford are going to find out an awful lot about themselves after this weekend, but Galway to win.
Yeah, okay, so in the Munster Senior Hurling Championship in round 3, we have Cork Limerick. And to be fair, lads, Wexford Galway just pip Cork Limerick for us to concentrate on this week, because this is going to be a cracker. Cork are 8-11 favourites, Limerick are 7-5, and arguably these are the two most impressive teams so far in the Munster Championship, Cheddar.
Look, another very, very close game. And I'd say, again, a tactical game, obviously, but, particularly with Limerick and that. It's hard to judge Limerick. It's all you can go on here is recent form. There's no point in looking at a whole lot of other things. You've got to look at the things that matter. And recent form, Limerick had a very, very good win against Tipperary. But look, Tipperary were a long ways off of where they needed to be to win that game. And that was proven in the first half against Cork the last day. But Cork have had decent form. I know they gave away a 9 points lead last weekend, and that would be a little bit worrying in its own right as well. But the game's in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and I would expect Cork to come out of that. Again, it's a couple of points here. And look, if Limerick won it by a good tactical game plan that unhinged Cork, that wouldn't surprise me either. Mind you, I think Cork have found a couple of backs as well. They found a couple of more players this year than they found last year, and some of them are standing up here proving that they have the credentials to be able to play at this level.
Yeah, Donoghue definitely was the one stood out. I was reading somewhere that Cork just love shootouts. And everybody kind of knows that Cork loves shootouts, and that was borne out in the first half against Tip, when it was like, let the hurling do the talking. And then when the intensity was lifted up, Cork weren't as good. You'd imagine Damien Limerick will bring in a savage intensity to this one, and they won't want to take Cork on in a shootout knowing Cork's qualities.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it. That's exactly the way they want to do it, just like the way they did against Tipperary. Limerick will try and make it physical and might tighten it up and make it tough. But once again, I'm just going to say these two teams, I think Cork will win because it's down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, and I think what happened to Cork in the second half against Tipperary, losing a 9 point win and again just to get a draw, was a good kick up the backside. So on that ground, I think the Cork will win down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh, but it's absolutely brilliant to see Limerick back in the Munster Championship competing at a top level, and we're talking about Limerick being in a very, very positive position. So they are, and they're a good young team, and I'm delighted to see that. But I'm going for Cork on them two grounds.
Just on that though, Cheddar, we saw how much, like, when Tipperary cut down that space, like, it was obvious in the first half where Cork were trying to hit. They were trying to hit the number 15 corner, and Harnady was breaking out there, and their movement was brilliant. Limerick won't be stupid enough then to, like, exactly what Damien was saying with Jackie Tyrrell and these fellas, stay back to the half back line. And we know Garrod Hegarty likes to work, Kyle Hayes likes to work back, and Morrissey likes to work back. So Cork won't get that joy of that lovely brand of hurling that they'll be playing against Limerick.
I know you'd expect that, all right. Look, there was a couple of features I thought about Cork last year, and you know, I questioned whether they were going to go ahead with that this year, but it appears that they are.
Yeah, we didn't have to worry, did we?
We didn't have to worry, no. I suppose it was just based on a comment from The Rock, and we were just surprised to hear that. But their athleticism with the ball coming off the platform is probably is the best I've ever seen of teams. So they're able to clear the tackle coming off the half-back line to be able to distribute the ball, and have that split second then to be able to put the ball into the right sort of space. So I think it's in a game like that, it's really your forwards tackling and your quickness to the tackle is really, really important, and not necessarily even a half hour line tackling. Let's say a ball breaks down in the half back line and a Cork half back mops it up. It's a real responsibility then for your forward line even to track back and get in the tackle. Just slow down the speed of the ball coming out of the defence, or the runner coming out of the defence, and definitely stop the quality of the ball going into the likes of these Cork forwards, because they are exceptional effective forwards when they get that space. So I expect, you know, they're the things I would like to be looking at. But I think, you know, one of the things that I saw in Limerick was the mobility of the ball to be able to create space in Limerick at the minute is very good. And it's, for example, so different to Tipperary in terms of the way they play. But I think Cork have got good, quick backs as well. And the likes of Splann and some of those, you know, their change of movement and to be able to anticipate where the ball is and get to it quickly and to track players and that is probably a good antidote for the likes of Gillan and some of these forwards as well. So, you know, the thing, you know, it's hard to see an advantage coming to either team tactically if they set themselves up and do these things well.
Okay, so you're both happy to go for Cork at 8-11. That's what that looks like. So we'll go to Waterford Tipperary, and I mentioned this at the start of the show, lads. Waterford, Paddy has Waterford at 1-10, unbelievable price in a Munster Championship, and Tipperary are 13-2. So, like, I mean, what are you going to go for there? That's fairly obvious.
Derek has been dealt a tough hand here, but you know, I said earlier on in the discussion, sometimes you can turn these things to your advantage by, you know, coming with a different game plan to suit the players that you're going to put into your team and that, and you know, your backs are to the wall, and you know Damien explained it well here about Tipperary last week. Sometimes you just have to get stuck in here and do the business. And you know, if the Waterford panel and the Waterford team and the Waterford public feel like this, yeah, they could very well, you could get very well get a performance out of them. The difficulty is, it's not in their home ground, it's in Limerick. It's a long ways away from Waterford support, Waterford city, and that coming across the country again to get to the game. And you know, Waterford are a team like that. They play on their support, and the support really get behind them when they're playing well, and they improve their performances by that. The other side of that, Tip, you know, have got the wake up call that they were looking for, I would think, and you would expect them just to take off where they finished against Cork the last day. So you look just on form and you know, the number of players that Waterford are missing, and particularly the critical players that are missing from the game plan that they've practiced so well, you'd have to give Tipperary, you know, the odds probably are not too far wrong.
Yeah, Colin, but I think this is a great game for Tip to get. You know, we all know the Waterford hand, they've been dealt an awful amount of injuries, but just to say on the last day, fair play to Tip and fair play to the Tip management. I would love to have been a fly in the wall for what was said at half time. I'd say there was a couple of home truths said, and I'd say lads were asked and questioned about their pride and passion in the Tipperary jersey, you know. And what happened in the second half for the Tip Cork game was a momentum changer. That's a game season changer. You see Tip now, I'd say if Mick Ryan asked him by to go back to train at 11 o'clock that night, they'd have come back and they would have been a pep in their step, and they would have been jumping to the winner, because that is momentum changer. I say keep an eye on Tipperary this year. I reckon Tip will have a big say in this year's championship. I thought there was a lot of top class performance, in particular in the second half. So Jason Ford's goal in the first half was a massive, massive score. You had the McGraths, you had the Mahers, all these boys stood up to the mark. So they had, they were all absolutely brilliant. And I think Tip will beat Waterford. I think it will be comfortable. So it will, regarding the team, the Waterford. But just keep an eye on Tip. Tip will be, have a big season this year. And what happened the last day doesn't just happen by accident. That's what they call character. And they will have a big say in this year's championship. And I backed them to win Munster. And I'm going to stand over it. I'm still going to back Tip to win Munster championship.
Yeah, okay, great stuff. Dublin and Offaly, 1-7. Dublin are, and Offaly are 5-1. So this is a relegation battle, Cheddar. You know, and it'll be played out like that.
Yeah, look, this is a massive game for both counties, obviously. It is a relegation battle for Offaly, but bear in mind Dublin have to play Galway in the last game, but I think that game's in Salt Hill. Damien might correct me on that. So, you know, that's not no easy task. So this is the game for who wants to stay in the All-Ireland Championship, and of course that brings up a whole different discussion. But let's just talk about the game for a minute. Look, it's in Parnell Park, serious advantage to Dublin here. Dublin have had a week off to prepare for this game, and we're going back to, you know, what we were discussing earlier on again in terms of the advantages of that, and Offaly took a bad beating from a team that they really went out to beat against Wexford in last Sunday, so it may not be in a great mental place for that. But I'll say one thing about Offaly hurling that you know, all their teams down the years, and particularly it's easy to say this when they had All-Ireland winning teams, but any of their teams, when their back is to the wall, they will fight, and they will definitely fight for their manager in this one. And even though the game's in Parnell Park, I actually think that if Dublin stay playing the way they're playing at the minute, with, you know, a sort of a semi-sweeper and with going route one to the square and that, you know, may very well suit Offaly. And, you know, I'd be surprised if Dublin don't change their game plan a little bit here, because they definitely have some players around the periphery of their panel, the Burks, the Winters and all of those, who are very, very quick players. And Offaly were very much unhinged against Galway by the pace and the space they left in their own back line, and the very same against Wexford. They left a very, very open room there, and I just think that if Dublin go route one the same way as they did against Kilkenny, I don't think there'll be an awful lot in it, to be honest with you. But if they open it up and play the space and you know, play the stick pass, then I would think that Dublin will win it a little bit more easy.
Right, okay. And Joe McDonagh Cup fourth round is on as well. So Meath play Kerry, Laois are at home to Carlow in a huge game, and Westmeath, Laois would obviously want Westmeath to beat Antrim, that's on as well, and we'll do a little bit of that, a little bit on that on Monday's show. So that's all we've time for. But before we go, I have to announce that we're going to be doing performance, Paddy Power's performance of the weekend, a little bit differently. Now, they're not giving me the power anymore, so we're going to do a poll on the website, and the winner of the performance of the weekend is going to get a pair of Paddy Power boxer shorts. So listen, they've cranked it up a notch, and keep your eye out for the poll, and you can vote to see who gets it. All right, talk to you then. Good luck.
The GAA Hour with Colin Parkinson is brought to you by Paddy Power, home of the Money Back Special.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop, and when I got the chance to go, I said I'd stay going, so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know, and it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, 'cause I won't see you later.